Good morning. We're here for argument in the case of Wolf Ranch versus the City of Colorado Springs. We're ready to hear from the petitioner.
Yes, thank you. I'm Bruce Wright. Here with me today is my co-counsel, Greg Walta. I was actually the transaction lawyer involved in the history of this matter. Greg has been handling the litigation side of it, but since I have the familiarity with the facts in the background, Greg asked me to do the oral argument. So, for better or worse, you get me. There are a couple of preliminary matters. First, if you've gone through the briefs, I'm sure you recognize the e-record in this case is a total mess. We have filed a supplemental citation, which I will refer to in my argument, that will just abbreviate those sites. But if you look at that, it will have the full e-record site. If you need an extra copy, I have some with me. The second thing I'd like to talk about are bridge fees. Wolf Ranch never requested any exclusion from bridge fees in its master drainage plan that it submitted to the city for approval. City engineer Dave Lethbridge confirmed this before the drainage board at the hearing, and that's site one. Bridge fees simply are not an issue in this case, and Wolf Ranch has never requested an exemption from them. The issue you certified for review is pretty concise. It's whether the Court of Appeals erred in ruling that the Regulatory Impairment of Property Rights Act is not applicable when a governmental body legislatively adopts a uniform fee, but then determines on individual and discretionary basis whether or not to apply that fee to specific properties. The issue can perhaps best be illustrated by taking the extreme example. Suppose the city legislatively adopted a uniform fee, but then exempted every property in the city from it except one. Clearly, the act would apply. This is why the act contains what I'll call the legislative fee exemption. However, that exemption has two requirements. First, the fee must be legislatively formulated, which is the test focused on by the Court of Appeals. And second, the fee must be imposed on a broad class of property owners. I think the key issue in this case is whether the city's exercise of its discretion to treat as closed basins properties in the 10,000-acre Briargate annexation means the city's drainage ordinance violates the second requirement for an exemption, namely that the fee be applied to a broad class of property owners. This discretion was contractually bargained for and agreed to between the city and the several property owners as part of the 1982 Briargate annexation agreement.
Would you clarify the facts? Now, would you agree this is a first-time issue regarding this exemption, and that it isn't that many other exemptions have been granted and your client was denied one?
That's correct.
Okay. And number two, is it the fact that there was no action taken to the district court under 106 of the civil rules that would allow a challenge to an arbitrary decision of the governmental entity?
We did not bring Rule 106, Justice Hobbs, because we didn't believe it was arbitrary. The city made a determination. We didn't agree with it, but we didn't think it was arbitrary. As to whether the annexation agreement required the city to exempt or just gave it discretion, that was arguably something that could be taken up on a 106. We decided not to do that because we thought the city had good reason for its position that it had discretion.
But the posture of this case is that you're going directly trying to fit yourself within the exaction statute in a matter that involves the discretion of the city.
That's correct.
Okay.
That annexation agreement was equally applicable to all 10,000 acres annexed, and it was an important part of the agreement in considering whether to annex. And I'd like to stop here for a minute. At the time we annexed Briargate, the city's philosophy was to ship all of its stormwater runoff into the creek and flush it down to Pueblo. We didn't think that was a responsible thing to do. We wanted to do Briargate differently. We wanted to be sensitive, and we wanted to detain our stormwater runoff on-site so that as Briargate developed, we would have no adverse impact on properties downstream. We were kind of a first-time poster child for that approach in Colorado Springs, but it was important to us. Going to the meaning of the broad class of property owners, both this court's prior decision in Krupp v. Breckenridge Sanitation District and the legislative history of the act give some insight into the exemption. In Krupp, you stated, when a governmental entity assesses a generally applicable legislatively based development fee, all similarly situated landowners are subject to the same fee schedule, and a specific landowner cannot be singled out for an extraordinary concession as a condition to development. That's at page 696 of Krupp. Additionally, in testimony before the full Senate, Senator Hellman stated the exemption in the act would be applicable to broad zoning ordinances that apply to everyone. Thus, to qualify for the exemption, the legislative fee must be applicable to a very broad class of property owners indeed. Perhaps everyone, and certainly all those similarly situated. We now need to look at the facts of this case. It's undisputed the Briargate Annexation Agreement gave the city express authority to exempt lands within Briargate from its drainage ordinance on an individualized basis and treat them as closed basins. It is also undisputed the city has exercised this discretion and already treated 7,500 acres within Briargate as closed basins, exempt from the city's drainage ordinance, fully 75% of all land in Briargate. That's site two. In addition, the city expressly admitted it was not required to include Wolf Ranch in the Cottonwood fee basin, and that it had discretion to either treat it as a closed basin or include it as a fee basin. That's site three. Counsel for the city admitted in the proceedings below the city had this discretion, and the trial court expressly found the city utilized this discretion with respect to Wolf Ranch, and I'm quoting now, individualized to the circumstances of the property rather than uniformly across the area being annexed. These facts cannot be disputed. The city's decisions to exempt portions of Briargate from the drainage ordinance were made only after development started in those basins. Once development started, the developer then paid fees in suspense until a detailed drainage plan was prepared showing the on-site detention was feasible. And after that, the suspense fees were refunded once the city adopted the closed basin report. This procedure was followed for Pine Creek in 1988, that's site five, and Kettle Creek in 2002, that's site six. Exactly the same procedure was followed for Wolf Ranch. Development did not start in Wolf Ranch until 2004 at site seven, at which time Wolf Ranch started paying fees in suspense on that development at site eight. Justice was done on Pine Creek and Kettle Creek pending the detailed drainage study. The detailed drainage study was then prepared showing on-site detention is both feasible and desirable for the 1,600 acre tributary of Cottonwood Creek contained in Wolf Ranch called Reach 4. Just as the detailed studies of Pine Creek and Kettle Creek showed was the case for the portions of those basins that were exempted. The city has stated it believes the Wolf Ranch study is excellent and will require Wolf Ranch to retain stormwater on its site per the study, whether or not it designates Wolf Ranch as a closed basin or requires payment of fees at site nine. Thus, Wolf Ranch gets the worst of both worlds. It is required to pay fees, just like downstream properties in Cottonwood Creek that were not required to build on-site detention. And it is required to build on-site detention, just like Pine Creek and Kettle Creek, which were not required to pay fees. Thus, it's clear the city's drainage ordinance has not been uniformly applied to all similarly situated landowners in Briargate, thus triggering the act.
I guess, go ahead.
Mr. Wright.
Yes.
Could you address the argument? I understand the finding of the trial court and the points you've made, but I think, at least to the extent I understand it, that the city argues that we're giving the same fee to just all the other people, but just in the Cottonwood Creek drainage. And that's as I take it, maybe this is incorrect, that's what they consider to be the broad class of property owners, just the smaller universe. So could you address that argument?
Well, one, we think the proper universe is the universe where the city expressly reserved discretion, which is the 10,000-acre Briar Gate. But even if you take the smaller...
Wait a minute, that's consistent with the annexation agreement.
That's correct. Even if you take the smaller universe, just the Cottonwood Creek fee basin, there are about 20 property owners in that basin, according to the city's response brief. Not a very big universe. The city argues it's treating all those property owners the same, and thus they're all paying the same fee, and why are we bitching?
Exactly.
Well, the reason we're bitching is that's simply not true. The city has exempted the Cottonwood Creek tributary called Pine Creek from any requirement to pay a fee because stormwater is being detained on site, and thus there's no adverse impact on Cottonwood Creek or eventually Monument Creek. The city also acknowledged its Cottonwood Creek study does not provide for any detention at all. Thus, the downstream property owners were not required to detain their stormwater on site, but rather were allowed to dump it into Cottonwood Creek. And the city engineer even called this the letter rip approach. Thus, it's entirely appropriate those downstream property owners were required to pay a fee to mitigate the impact of their stormwater they're dumping in the creek. The city's applying a different set of rules to Wolf Ranch. It's being required to detain 100% of its flow on site at a cost of over $7.5 million, and yet still pay a fee as if it were adversely impacting downstream property, just like the downstream owners were allowed to do in the letter rip scenario.
Could I interrupt you? And I'm here, please.
Sure.
I'm not sure that this is exactly apropos of what you're saying, but if I could just ask this question, it would help me understand maybe your argument a little bit better. Is what you're saying basically that even though they had this legislation and it ostensibly applied to this broad class, you were treated differently than others who were treated differently within this broad class? Some people were given exemptions, but you were just plain old treated differently. Is that right?
That's correct. We were treated differently if you look at the whole Briargate annexation,
right,
from the other two basins where we are doing exactly the same thing.
And I guess my question is that obviously you can have exemptions from broad-based legislation. I mean, if you make a rule, some people can have exemptions from that rule. You would agree with that?
Yes.
But you say you're even different than that, right?
Yes.
And that's the point that I'm having trouble with.
Well, it's because we insisted that the city have the express right to close basins in Briargate and exempt Briargate or portions of it from the city's drainage ordinance. That was a contract with the city based upon which we brought in the 10,000 acres in Briargate. So it's different than if the city applies a fee uniformly and then on some other basis goes out to do an exemption. We had a contract with the city that they would consider this.
So how is it different? I know it's almost a matter of semantics, but the deal they made with you was different than the uniformly formulated legislative intent, let's just use that language. And even within that, they're treating you differently?
Yes. If you look at just Cottonwood Creek, they let everyone else downstream flush their drainage into the creek, which obviously has an impact, and then they made them pay a fee. That's appropriate. They came to us and they said, no, you have to detain on site, which we wanted to do anyway, so we have no negative impact. And that they said, yeah, but now you have to pay the same fee as the people who just flush it down the creek. That's treating us differently there. So we're not uniformly applied, which means the act comes into play, because the act doesn't come into play only if you uniformly apply your ordinance.
I'm confused. The city is requiring Wolf Ranch to do the onsite, I thought it, drainage, retainage, I guess. I thought that was the proposal by Wolf.
Well, we proposed it, the city liked it, in fact, they thought it was excellent, and there's testimony in the record, I've got the site here somewhere, where the city said they're requiring us to detain onsite no matter what. So they're requiring us to detain onsite and pay the fee, and that's why we're here talking to you.
Okay.
Let me just briefly mention the Municipal League's amicus brief. If I can find my notes. The Municipal League's brief states the act should not apply to fees that, in the league's own words, are standard and uniformly imposed in such a way that all similarly situated landowners are subject to the same fee schedule. We couldn't agree more. We don't argue with that at all. We believe it's only when the governmental entity expressly retains, in this case by contract, the discretion to exempt or not exempt properties from that ordinance, and then exercises that discretion on an individualized basis, we then believe the act becomes applicable because the ordinance is not being applied on a uniform basis.
But so you would say that if they retain that discretion and use it, the act becomes applicable, which isn't that the same as not having any discretion at all?
Well, I don't believe so.
Could you help me with that, please?
Well, if they don't have any discretion, they can't exempt anybody. The ordinance has to apply to everybody.
But if they do have discretion and use it, then they're subject to the act.
I think only in cases where they specifically by contract have agreed to apply that discretion to a specific area.
So really, almost our problem is the word discretion. They really don't have discretion. They've made certain, I guess you might say, contractual concessions to some and not others.
Well, I wouldn't characterize it that way.
Okay. What would you say? Do you understand what I'm concerned about? If you're saying that they can have discretion, but if they use it, they're subject to the act, that's the same as no discretion, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
They specifically retained the discretion to exempt portions of Briargate from the drainage ordinance. They haven't done that anywhere else in the city. And we required them to do that as a condition to annexing Briargate, because we did not want to dump our stormwater downstream and harm downstream properties. The city then exercised that discretion within Briargate. And that is what we believe triggers the act. It's no draconian sort of thing. All it means is now the city has to show there's a reasonable nexus and that the fee has some rough proportionality to the impact. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Well, let me ask you, it just sounds like a breach of the annexation agreement, the way it's postured, and then it's put into a statute that has a specialized backup function with respect to constitutional takings claims. And I guess I'm concerned about the really broad policy implication of what you're arguing. Now, is this a case of first impression? Is there any other decision by our court or even the Court of Appeals having to do with the application of the statute where an illegal exaction is found under the statute as opposed to challenging an arbitrary action or a breach of contract by a municipality?
Justice Hobbs, I think you got a clean slate on this one. It is a case of first impression.
And it's interesting to me, your answer, your earlier answer to Justice Hobbs, that you thought this was not a breach of discretion.
No, they clearly have discretion.
Right, and therefore 106 wasn't appropriate.
But if they exercise discretion and they don't apply the ordinance uniformly, then the act applies because it doesn't fit within the exemption. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal if I could.
You may.
Thank you.
Good May it please the court, my name is Will Bain with the City Attorney's Office in Colorado Springs, bar number 27558. Justice Hobbs, you hit the nail on the head. This is a breach of contract case purporting to be a takings case. 2920203 subsection 1 explicitly states that the takings clause statute shall not apply to any legislatively formulated fee that applies to a broad class of property owners. It's agreed we've got a legislatively formulated fee here. The question is, what is the broad class? Petitioner says the broad class includes two other basins. The fee that is at issue here is the Cottonwood Creek Basin fee. The Cottonwood Creek Basin fee only applies to the Cottonwood Creek Basin. It has never applied to Kettle Creek. It has never applied to any portion of Pine Creek. This fee, the Cottonwood Creek Basin fee, applies as broadly as it could without running afoul of the very statute we're talking about.
Well, did they make a deal exempting themselves from the fee, and did the city agree to it?
I'm sorry, Justice Hobbs.
Did the city make a deal on the annexation to exempt them from the fee?
Absolutely not. What paragraph 5.6 of the annexation agreement said in 1982 is that the city would have the discretion to close either the entire annexation of 10,000 acres, or portions of the basin. And so when the city answered the petitioner's call to close their 1,500 acres in the Cottonwood Creek Basin, the city simply fulfilled its contractual obligation under the 1982 agreement. We're required to consider under rule paragraph 5.6 of the annexation agreement whether we'll close your basin. And the city did exercise its discretion with respect to the annexation agreement, but that kind of discretion that was exercised is not at all the kind of discretion that the legislature had in mind in enacting 2920-201 at C.
Well, why do you say that this fee or assessment is as broad as it can be without running afoul of the act?
It's a drainage fee. There are roughly 30 drainage basins in the city of Colorado Springs. Each basin has its own unique fee. The fee is based on the studies that are done. In this case, a study was done in 79, then in 94, and then in 2000. Each study considers how much drainage infrastructure and bridges need to be built to accommodate all of the water that is falling in the basin, from the very top of the basin all the way down. The study then calculates what the cost of all that drainage infrastructure is going to be, and then divides that number by the number of acres so that every acre in the entire basin pays its fair share of the infrastructure. So each fee is collected solely for the benefit of that basin. If the Cottonwood Creek Basin fee were applied to property in any other basin, that would clearly violate the statute we're talking about, because there'd be no essential nexus. Why do I, in some other basin, have to pay for the drainage infrastructure in Cottonwood Creek Basin? The people who are in Cottonwood Creek Basin, who are going to be releasing a lot more water because of the impervious surfaces, they need to pay for their own drainage infrastructure.
Now, Mr. Bain, if I'm not mistaken, and I guess Mr. Wright will correct me if I am, he's talking about Cottonwood Creek Basin as including the tributaries of Kettle Creek and Pine Creek, and essentially as part of that same basin. He's making that comparison. You instead are defining it differently, that is, excluding Kettle Creek Basin and Pine Creek Basin, and then talking about uniform treatment within the remainder, shall I say. Can you comment on that and how it is? It seems like with those very different definitions, you get to different conclusions.
Yes, thank you, Justice Martinez. The first point to make is that Pine Creek is not a tributary of Cottonwood Creek Basin. Pine Creek drains into Monument Creek. Cottonwood Creek drains into Monument Creek south of Pine Creek. The confusion comes, and this appears in the record, but the confusion comes because the very southern portion of the Pine Creek Basin, which is adjacent to the Cottonwood Creek Basin, has historically, since the 70s, simply been included in the study of the Cottonwood Creek Basin, even though it's a separate basin. And that's simply because it's the very bottom end of the basin. There was development in that bottom area of the Pine Creek Basin. So for ease, it was simply included in the Cottonwood Creek Basin as a study and as part of the fee. Folks in the and the bottom portion of the Pine Creek Basin still are subject to the fee. The portion of Pine Creek Basin that was closed was far north on the north end of Colorado Springs. It's a completely separate basin from the Cottonwood Creek Basin. It was closed in 1988 at the very beginning of development, when one developer essentially owned the entire basin, and where it was more efficient for that one owner to handle all of the drainage infrastructure. Keep in mind, all the city does when it comes to the fees and the building is simply act as an administrator. They simply collect the fees and turn them over to other developers who are owed fees.
Mr. Bay, let me ask you one other question. And the essence of the question is, how important is this definitional difference that seems to exist between you and Mr. Wright in terms of what's Cottonwood Creek Basin? And I guess the way I want to ask that is, if you make his assumption that that's one basin that includes Kettle Creek Basin and Pine Creek Basin, do you then find his argument convincing?
I do find it a persuasive argument if you do assume that all three of those basins are part of the same basin and subject to...
So this is really a pivotal difference in the two positions.
It is a very pivotal difference, Your Honor.
Mr. Bain, if that's so, how do you get around the stipulation that the city made at the trial court and the finding of fact that the trial court made that it's not the exemption is not generalized across city or the next property, but it's tailored specifically to Cottonwood Creek drainage basin?
The record reflects, Justice Bender, that the city has closed various basins around the city, primarily where there's been a single developer developing the basin and it makes sense for that single developer. Those basins have been closed subject to annexation agreements as well. The fact that the annexation agreement here forces the city contractually to consider whether to close certain portions of basins does not trigger the act, however. That's the individualized and discretionary decision making that the act contemplates is the amount, and this is one point the Court of Appeals hit on. If the individualized and discretionary decision making goes towards the amount of money that a developer has to pay, that's what triggers the act. But here...
Wait a second. So in other words, you mean Judge Connolly's distinction between the amount and an exemption? Is that
yes.
The point you're making?
Yes, the statute
says. But isn't that really just, isn't that a little illusory? I mean, I had a little trouble. I understand the words, but it seemed like the exemption's worth quite a bit of money, so it's an amount as well.
Yes, but I think the situation, and Justice Martinez was talking about this, if you do have a single basin and the city has the discretion to exempt half of the basin but not the other half, well, the other half that is not exempt is, assuming the city does it this way, going to have much higher fees, because that has to pay all those other folks' fees. Well, then the act is triggered because you have disproportionately higher fees being paid by certain property owners. We agree that's unconstitutional. But here, when Kettle Creek Basin and Pine Creek Basin are exempted, their closure has no effect on the Cottonwood Creek Basin fee. The amount stays the same for everybody. A fee has been automatically applied to everybody in the Cottonwood Creek Basin since the 70s. Never changed. In fact, no developer has even ever asked to be exempt.
But what did you stipulate to when you said it was discretionary? What specifically?
I don't believe the city ever stipulated to. What the city conceded was that it did have the discretion to exempt the Wolf Ranch property. But the discretion that it had was not part of the drainage ordinance or the fee system that applied to the Cottonwood Creek Basin. The discretion that it had was simply under the annexation agreement. The annexation agreement required the city to exercise its discretion in determining whether the basin should be closed. If Wolf Ranch had come to the city and said, we'd like to consider closing our portion of the basin, and the city simply slammed the door shut and said, we're not going to listen to you, that would have been a breach of the annexation agreement, and we'd be here on the breach of contract case.
Well, it's a little subtle, because it sounds like they were enticed possibly by the idea that they could put in their own drainage facilities, pay for them, and in effect then not have to contribute to the overall structure, infrastructure, drainage infrastructure for the basin. So will you sort that out for us? I mean, weren't they tricked?
I will. No, Justice Hobbs, they were not tricked. The record makes clear that drainage infrastructure development is an evolving science. This basin, like every other basin in Colorado Springs, has gone detention pond no detention pond. Detention pond, no detention pond. Keep in mind, when drainage studies are done, they're not done just by the city. In fact, the record shows that the letter rip philosophy that caused so much havoc after 2000, that was a study put together by the same principle that is behind Wolf Ranch in this case. People thought in the 90s detention ponds were the way to go, but the developers didn't like that. This is in the record. The developers didn't like that because it cost too much money. So they came forward with the letter rip philosophy, where we're going to just have natural flows and drainage. Well, that didn't work because it was causing so much havoc because there was not much infrastructure. The developers were behind the fees in the 90s, and they've been behind the fees in 2000. So to say, for Wolf Ranch to come and say, well, we're going to do this great thing in terms of keeping the water on our property, well, that's the way it was done in the 90s, but it was expensive. So the reason that they're doing detention now is because everybody in Colorado Springs is doing detention. The letter rip philosophy was a good idea in theory, but in practice it simply didn't work out. It's also not unfair for the city to exercise its discretion. Under the annexation agreement, the 5.6 paragraph says the city is to exercise its discretion in determining whether it is practicable to close. It was practicable to close Pine Creek, and it was practicable to close Kettle Creek, but it's not practicable here. It would be simply unfair to exempt these 1,500 acres from the fee that has to be paid.
Could I ask you to respond to Mr. Wright's contention that his client, Wolf Ranch, has the worst of both worlds, that they have to put in their on-site detention and they have to pay the fees? At least that's what I understood he was saying.
Chief Justice Mularkey, Wolf Ranch is doing what all the developers are doing, and that is detaining the water on their property. When Wolf Ranch says that when they do their development, they're not going to have any change in historic flows, and they're not going to have any impact on downstream properties, that's simply inaccurate. The only way for development not to have impact on downstream properties is to retain all of the water on their property permanently and never release it. Well, Wolf Ranch isn't doing that. They're going to release water from their development at the same flow that they have done historically. When it has flooded on Wolf Ranch's property, that's floodwaters coming off. Well, there's still going to be floodwaters coming off of Wolf Ranch's property. Even though it may not become coming down the drainage in a let her rip philosophy, it's still going to be coming down in enormous quantities. The downstream property owners who've had to build their infrastructure for drainage, they weren't building their infrastructure simply for their own property. They're building it for all of the water upstream in the basin that has to be accommodated to make sure that there isn't serious erosion and that water is controlled as it goes down to Monument Creek and on down to Pueblo. So when they say they're not having any impact on others in the basin, that's simply inaccurate. I'd also point out, and the record makes clear, that roughly 10% of the fee that is required to be paid goes to the capital component. And the capital component is what the city and the study in 2000 recognized in the basin. The basin is a mess. There's all sorts of more infrastructure that needs to be built in because what they had done historically, while it seemed good at the beginning, didn't work out practically. So that 10% fee that is going to fix the basin so that all of the water throughout the basin can be channeled appropriately, they're asking to be exempt from that. Well, that's not fair to every other property owner that has to pay that. Mr. Wright has said today that they're not asking to be exempt from the bridge fee. That's the first time that we've heard that. So all along, the understanding has been that they've asked to be exempt from that fee as well. It's one fee. There are simply three components to it: the drainage infrastructure part, the bridge fee, and the capital component. So if they were to be exempt from the bridge fee, I won't spend time with it. That would be terribly unfair to the other property owners. There are 3,000 acres left in the Cottonwood Creek Basin that are going to be developed. Half of them are owned by Wolf Ranch. If Wolf Ranch is exempted from this fee, those other 1,500 are going to be stuck with the bill.
So the legislative design is to spread out the impact of new growth among the developers and create a fund where some developers upfront necessary drainage improvements for the basin and then have the ability, in effect, to collect. back their investment as other property is developed.
That's exactly right. This basin is huge, 15,000 acres. Certain portions of it are going to have to build a lot more infrastructure than other portions. Presumably, the people at the bottom of the basin have to deal with all of the volume from the water, of the water throughout the basin. They'll invariably build lots more infrastructure and therefore be owed money. Here, the amount of money that is owed to those folks who've gone ahead and built infrastructure for the basin is roughly $6.5 million. As I say in my brief, the record shows that there are 22, roughly, property owners who had to build so much infrastructure on their property that they're now owed money from property owners who don't have to build much infrastructure. That's not to say that there are only 22 property owners in the Cottonwood Creek Basin. They're simply those 22 who had to build that much infrastructure. The record doesn't show how many property owners there are in the basin. It doesn't show every little mom and pop who've built a little house on their property. What is important, though, for this discussion is the point that the fee applies to every single property in the basin. Nobody's ever been exempted. And the drainage fee that applies here, in fact, the ordinance does not allow for the city to make any kind of exemption. The only possibility of the exemption came out of the annexation agreement.
Mr. Bean, before you move on, can you just help me understand that? I know you've already answered this question, but I just have to ask it again. I mean, I think you're making the argument this is broadly applicable. Everybody in this basin has to pay, and everybody has had to pay, right? There have been no exemptions, correct?
Yes.
But how is it that this perhaps contractually bargained for opportunity to get an exemption, how does that not make this not a broad or generally applicable fee? I mean, is it because it's contractually bargained for, but on the books in the legislative determination, it's generally applicable? Is that what you're arguing?
Yes. I think legislatively, if the annexation agreement were not a part of this case, it didn't exist at all, of course, we wouldn't be here.
Correct.
But so the fact that the annexation agreement exists and there is a possibility for an exemption to be made doesn't turn this into an individualized and discretionary decision regarding the amount that needs to be paid. We do agree, Justice Ide, that if the city went ahead and exempted a huge portion of the Cottonwood Creek Basin from payment of fees under the annexation agreement and then foisted those fees on all of the other property owners, those other property owners would probably have a fairly decent, roughly proportional argument to make.
Well, I guess what I'm concerned is, I mean, those are arguments that actually go to the merits, and you're basically saying their claim on the merits is probably a weak claim or whatever. But I guess I'm trying to understand or pinpoint why the fact that this exemption is contractual, why does that not turn this from a broadly applicable to less broadly applicable than it could possibly be? And I guess your answer to that is just on the ordinance itself, on the face of the ordinance, it's broadly applicable. But then you went ahead and did something contractually that that made the exemption possible?
Yes.
Okay.
I apologize for misunderstanding your question earlier, yeah. Justice Ide. The fee is as broadly applicable as it can be. The fact that the city can exercise the discretion to exempt just a small portion of the Cottonwood Creek Basin, one could argue that it perhaps makes it a little bit less broad-based because there is some discretion, but we assert that it doesn't make it nearly enough of a less broad-based fee to trigger the act in this case.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Could I follow up 1 second on that? You've confused me just a little bit about the way this fee is set and what it means. Did I hear you saying that if you were to grant exemptions in Cottonwood Creek, that would have an effect on the fee of the others?
In this particular case, if Wolf Ranch were exempted?
Or as a general proposition?
Yes.
If it does, then are you agreeing or disagreeing with the rationale of the Court of Appeals that by exempting people, you are not exercising your discretion with the amount of the fees?
We do agree with the Court of Appeals when they say, well, the amount here was not determined on an individualized and discretionary basis. What I am saying is that if the fee goes up substantially for all of the other property owners, then they could have an argument that the amount of fee they have to pay is not roughly proportional to the impact that they're causing.
You said if the fee goes up?
Yes.
Goes up as a result of you granting exemptions to other developers?
Yes. In other words, if you spread the fees that the exempt property would have had to pay, and you spread that out among all of the other developers, their fees would go up to perhaps potentially to an extent that would be roughly disproportional and in violation of the act. Another alternative would be the city could exempt certain portions of a basin, but then the city would step forward and through taxes simply pay the difference. So at least on the
Well, that seems to be a big difference, doesn't it, in terms of how the fee is set? If the fee is determined on the basis of a study in how many acres there are and therefore what the fair share would be, or however you decide that there's going to be a fee per acre of drainage. Now, what I'm not understanding here is it seems to me you're saying, but if you decide to discretionarily exempt some developer, some property, that then changes the fee that you would impose on the others? I can understand if you're talking about some people may not be recompensed if they've spent first and now there's nobody to contribute more. But are you saying the fee per acre actually changes based on your exemptions?
The first thing I need to emphasize is I'm only speaking hypothetically. The city does not have the power to do this. The city does not have the power to just exempt certain property from paying the fee except through annexation agreements. There's nothing in the city code that says the city can pick and choose who's not going to have to pay the fee. So
okay.
I'm only speaking in a hypothetical scenario. So hypothetically, if the city set some criteria for whom they could exempt, say, senior citizens or something like that, well, automatically if you subtract fees that are going to have to pay their fee, if you're going to subtract acres that have to pay their fees, those fees are going to have to be paid by somebody. And presumably the city would impose those fees on other developers in the basin. You could probably do that to a certain extent as long as you remain roughly proportional. It's only when those fees become not roughly proportional that you get into takings territory.
Well, it's still perplexing. This property has not been developed yet, right?
The Wolf Ranch property?
Yes.
A portion of it has been developed.
It has been, and they put in the detention ponds.
Yes.
Now, do they have a choice now not to pay for the detention ponds and just rely on the overall basin drainage infrastructure?
No.
Why not?
Because they have to do what everybody else has to do in that basin.
So everybody else is doing both? They're doing retention ponds and contributing the fee to the overall structure?
It depends on how much infrastructure, Justice Hobbs, that a developer has to pay. If the developer owes $10 million in fees, but at the same time the study calls for $12 million of infrastructure to be built on their property, the developer will build that $12 million in infrastructure. They'll then be owed $2 million from future developers who don't have to build so much infrastructure and who will have to pay the
fee. So there's some kind of adjustment or offsetting mechanism at work here?
Yes.
In the way the fees that are collected are redistributed?
Yes. Yes, and in fact, I think that's an important point to make. The record makes clear that the principal who's behind Wolf Ranch has done development in the last 20 years, and they're owed $3.5 million right now. Right? They built so much infrastructure on their property that they're on the books to receive $3.5 million. Some of that would come from Wolf Ranch when they come to pay their fees. If Wolf Ranch is exempt from this, and essentially the principal behind Wolf Ranch is exempt from paying their fees, a perverse result will be that principal will be getting his $3.5 million from the other 1,500 acres that have yet to be developed. In other words, the principal who's behind this, who developed property where the infrastructure was so great that they're owed money, they're not asking to close that basin. Because if they asked to close that basin, they wouldn't get the $3.5 million that they're owed. It's only this Wolf Ranch where they have to build less infrastructure than they owe in fees where they want to close the basin, right? If the Wolf Ranch gets fully developed, they'll owe something like $6 million in fees. As the record makes clear, that $6 million is going to get offset by the $3.5 million that is already owed to the principal. And so Wolf Ranch will pay $2.5 million in fees. That's why we're here today. Wolf Ranch wants to avoid paying the $2.5 million in fees.
With regard to the agreement, though, it seems, and let me just say intuitively here, because I can't make all the connections, but it seems that opposing counsel's argument is, well, you shouldn't have entered into this kind of an annexation agreement. And by doing it, entering into an agreement that would have them retain the water, do retention ponds, that implicitly relieved them of a requirement to pay the fees.
The annexation agreement says nothing about how drainage will be done. It's fairly simple language that says the city will consider whether or not to close certain basins. It doesn't say there will be detention or not due detention.
Certain basins are portions of certain basins.
Yes.
Well, see, that's, it just seems to me incompatible, because the way you've described it is you close the whole basin or you don't. And here some bargain was made apparently to close part of it, which the city didn't decide to do. And it's a very curious annexation provision. I don't know who sought it or why it was agreed to or why the city agreed to it or what. Would you please elucidate on that?
One thing I'd emphasize, Justice Hobb, is we're not talking about one basin in the annexation agreement. It's three totally separate basins. The water from each of the separate basins goes to a separate area. They don't run into each other. So when Pine Creek gets closed, it has no effect on Cottonwood Creek Basin drainage or its fees, none whatsoever. When Kettle Creek Basin gets closed, it has no effect whatsoever on the Cottonwood Creek drainage and its fees. Closing those has no impact on Cottonwood Creek drainage basin. The discretion in 5.6 of the annexation agreement clearly makes it clear the city has discretion to decide whether it is feasible, practicable, or not to close certain portions of the basin. And here, for the reasons I've stated before, it would be dramatically unfair to all the other developers who are waiting to be paid and the developers who are going to develop in the future for them to take on the burdens that Wolf Ranch is not willing to take on themselves.
Mr. Bain, I think I understand the notion that it might make sense to close a basin, but I'm not sure that I understand, given your argument about the disparate impact of fees, that it ever makes sense to close a portion of the basin. It seems to me that what you were arguing before basically is it never makes sense to close a portion of a basin. Is that correct?
It depends on the basin, Your Honor. It doesn't make sense in Cottonwood Creek because there are so many developers, the development has gone on for so long and so much credit has been built up in the basin that needs to be repaid, that it will never make sense to close any portion of the Cottonwood Creek basin. When the Pine Creek basin gets closed, or the portion of it that is essentially above or north of Academy Boulevard, it makes sense that it gets closed because there's one developer on that whole, for that whole basin, who's going to be doing all of the infrastructure that needs to be built. And so the effect downstream is there's not going to be any effect. Kettle Creek, only a small portion of it lies within the city. Again, when that portion gets closed, Justice Martinez, they're only closing the portion that is being developed. The most of Kettle Creek is in the county. So when they close those two basins, there's simply no unfair impact on others in the basin. Unlike Cottonwood Creek Basin, where you're going to leave developers without their money that they've been owed in some cases decades, and you're going to foist the obligation off on the future developers. I'll start wrapping up my time by saying if the court were to reverse the Court of Appeals decision, the consequences would be potentially seismic. 2920203 subsection 1 makes clear that the legislation shall not apply to legislatively formulated fees that apply to a broad class of property owners. If a fee that applies to the entire Cottonwood Creek Basin, and that has applied for the last 30 years, is not a broad class, then it's very uncertain what is a broad class. And needless to say, there are landowners throughout the state, including Colorado Springs, who would love to come into court and talk about how their fee is a taking. And the courts would become inundated if everybody gets to come to court and say, well, it's not fair how much I'm having to pay. The purpose of that one sentence in 2920203 subsection 1 is for the sole purpose, in our opinion, to keep folks out of court so that courts don't have to spend time micromanaging and analyzing whether the legislatively based fee is correct or not.
Well, that's not exactly your position, because I think your position is that individual fee can be challenged, the imposition of the fee, through 106.
Yes.
Which is a remedial writ with respect to an agency decision-making, right?
That's exactly right, Justice Hobbs. There is remedy, and it's through...
And that wasn't done here.
That's correct.
So there's, what, some kind of failure to exhaust another remedy? And when you look at the two statutes and the rules together, you wouldn't resort to a very specific kind of taking statute when there are other remedies available to rectify a potential arbitrary action.
That's exactly right. There's always a remedy for the folks who don't like the fee that they have to pay. It's 106. It's not 2920203. Thank you for your time.
You remembered how much time I have. First, I'd like to follow up on something Mr. Bain said in his argument. He said, if the city had exempted large portions of the Cottonwood Creek Basin, then there would be a basis to apply the act, and it would be appropriate. That's exactly what happened. I'd like to quote to you the testimony of Mr. Dave Lethbridge, the city engineer, at the September 12, 2006 City Council hearing. Quote, the portion of Pine Creek that is upstream of Academy is closed. From Academy downstream, it has always been considered as part of the Cottonwood Basin. That just goes back to the old days when they were all one basin. The city's argument is basically, once we determine who to apply this fee to, then we're uniformly applying it to the people we determine to apply it to. That's completely circular. That's always the case. Here, in 1988, the city exempted several thousand acres of Pine Creek from paying any fee to the Cottonwood Creek Basin, even though it is a tributary to Cottonwood Creek, just like Reach 4 and Wolf Ranch is. Mr. Bain's argument would suggest that all the other property owners who are left in the basin fee were deprived because they don't have several thousand acres more in Pine Creek contributing to the fee. Next, I'd like to briefly address Mr. Bain's comment that obviously we're causing damage downstream. The testimony of the engineer who did the drainage report in the August 2006 City Council hearing was that in all but one very small instance, Wolf Ranch is actually over-detaining, which means after development, it will be releasing less flows downstream than occurred when there was nothing but jackrabbits and rattlesnakes out there. So we're, to the extent there are problems today, we're lessening them on our own nickel.
Well, can I ask you this? Your theory of the case is the illegal, unconstitutional exaction, correct?
No.
No? That's not why you're trying to invoke this statute? I mean, let's assume that a monetary penalty or damage or taking fee is owed. Who's going to pay it?
Well, there is no payment that's owed to us because we're not suing under the Constitution. We're suing under the Act. The Act is a legislative piece of law that says if the city applies fees arbitrarily or not uniformly to a broad class of property owners, then the fee has to have some rational nexus and it has to be roughly proportional. And if it's not, the court is given broad discretion to come up with an appropriate remedy. The Act doesn't give us the right to sue the city for damages because they took things. The Act just says when you apply fees arbitrarily or discretionarily, you have to have a justification for it. It has to be...
So I'm just trying to get at the remedy. You're asking us on a, you know, a case of first impression to construe the Act and presumably its remedies feature. So what you're really asking for is forgiveness under this statute for the payment of this fee.
What we're asking for, and that was in our petition to you, and in our opening brief, is that you order Wolf Ranch be treated as a closed basin, just like Pine Creek, which is part of the Cottonwood Drainage Basin, and just like Kettle Creek. That's all we're asking. Let me take a few minutes.
Before you move on to that, I have to interject. I thought what you were asking for, what you've been arguing for, is that this is, whatever decision was made was not part of a broad general legislative scheme. Instead, it was an individualized determination which triggers the act, correct?
Correct.
Well, doesn't that get you basically then entitled to a determination that this is, you know, whether this is roughly proportional and whether there's a nexus? Isn't that the next step? I'm trying to figure out how you get to the fact that you are owed an exemption here.
Well, first we have to show that the drainage ordinance was not equally applied to a broad class of property owners. It hasn't been. It hasn't been within Briargate. It hasn't been within the Pine Creek reach of Cottonwood Creek. And it hasn't been within those people still in Cottonwood Creek, because everyone else downstream was allowed to flush it into the creek and ship it downstream and pay a fee. We're not. We're required to detain, but we still have to pay the fee. So that's the discretion. Now, what do you do about it if the act becomes applicable? It's no draconian thing. All that is required once the act becomes applicable is the city has the burden of showing it has the fee has a rational nexus and the fee is roughly proportional to the impact. I mean, that's not a bad thing.
Well, no, and I guess I understand that, but essentially, though, basically saying this is, you're even in the ballpark to make a claim under the statute. That sort of two-step analysis has not been applied yet in this case, correct?
No, it does. It does. The statute's being arbitrarily applied. Under the statute, the burden now shifts to the city to prove in the record the nexus and the rough proportionality. And if the city doesn't do that, then the court is given broad discretion to remedy it.
Oh, but are you asking us to perform those two? If we determine and agree with you that this is some sort of individual inquiry, are you asking us to perform that nexus evaluation?
No, you don't have to, because the record is uncontested that there is no impact, and it's a review of the record. So Mr. Bain can come up here and say, well, I think there is. Statute says that doesn't count. It has to be in the record to show that it's roughly proportional. And the city has the burden of proof. This record is uncontested. There is no impact. And so there's nothing to weigh.
Thank you.
Yeah, but the remedy you seek is in effect, in the way of a mandamus action that would affect the overall status of this basin. You want the basin closed by order of the court, right? The entire basin?
No. Just like the portion of Kettle Creek, just like the portion of Pine Creek, the 1,600-acre portion of Cottonwood Creek that happens to be Reach 4 should be closed.
Your client's property only should be closed.
Correct.
Within the context of the overall remaining open portion of the Cottonwood Creek Basin.
Well, and it's not all of his property. Some of his property could not logically be closed. I mean, hydraulics just don't work. So we only applied to close the portion that could logically be done and effectively be done. Let me take a minute to talk about what this fee is for. The testimony in the record, and I've cited it in my briefs, are that the historic flows are wreaking havoc downstream in Cottonwood Creek. They are. The reason they are is that the city has allowed development to encroach in the historic floodplain of Cottonwood Creek. Problem with that is, under Colorado law, the Calvestri case that I've cited to you is the one that is the principle for this. Wolf Ranch has a pre-existing easement downstream for the discharge of its historic flows. The only reason those structures were put in is to protect the encroachments the city allowed into the floodplain. Because if they didn't allow encroachment into the floodplain, historic flows wouldn't be causing a problem because they're confined to the floodplain. So what the city is asking us to do is to pay $6 million in exactions over and above the $7.5 million to detain everything on site. So the city can reimburse people downstream, it required to put in protection necessary to protect the very encroachments the city allowed into our pre-existing easement. Now, if that's not exercising development approvals in an extortionate way, I don't know what is, because we weren't responsible for putting those encroachments in the floodplain. We don't benefit from them. The property owners benefit from them. They get a lot more developable land. But the city is asking us to chip in $6 million to pay to protect those encroachments into our pre-existing drainage easement for historic flows. And that's it. Thank you for listening to me.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case will...